Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Knives, machetes, saws, and shears, multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Welcome to DSC's Campfires with Larry Wysoon, the unique blend of hunting, conservation, and the outdoor lifestyle, delivered in an entertaining, informative fashion that only a veteran outdoorsman can do. DSC Campfires is brought to you by DSC, Conservation, Education, and Hunter Advocacy. Hornady, accurate, deadly, dependable. Trigicon, brilliant aiming solutions. Ruger, rugged, reliable firearms. Burnham Brothers Game Calls, callingest calls made. Double Nickel Taxidermy, where hunting memories are preserved. Taurus, maker of the Raging Hunter and other fine handguns. Now here's your host, Larry Wysoon.
Thank you, David Fox, and welcome to DSC's Campfires. This particular day, I've had great opportunity to sit down once again with Mr. Corey Mason, who's the executive director of the DSC Dallas Fort Club, and now also you're taking over the DSC Foundation as well, too. So we're all under one roof, which I am absolutely thrilled about, being a member, life member of DSC and then member of the DSC Foundation Board. Corey, we're just over a really nice event that happened here in Dallas.
We had a great event last Saturday night, and there at the Belo Mansion in Dallas. We had about 225 people in attendance, several more hundred that joined us online, and several north of 100 that joined us at a party at Conroe Taxidermy and Ox Ranch. And so, yes, we had a wonderful event, and obviously it raised needed funds for the mission of DSC, but in addition to that, many intangibles in the sense of getting people together again. And the chatter and the opportunity for people to get together and show fishing photos or whatever it was pretty electric.
It really was. I happened to be down at the Conroe event, and there were a lot of smiling faces down there, too. So I know everybody there had a good time. And we're all set for the convention as we move forward, right?
We are all as a go. We're in constant communication with the Convention Center, City of Dallas, and all those authorities that have control over the facilities. In touch with our volunteers. We're looking towards a couple of events coming up in October and one in December, our DSC 100 events.
Oh, yes.
We call them the DSC 100 because they give 100% of their time and talents. Now, you rewind years ago and it was the 100 because it was 100 people.
I remember those days.
Yes.
Right. It is that 100% effort. And yep. We've got the best volunteers in the world when it comes right down to it.
We do.
No finer group.
They are generous, their time and talents and treasures and everything in between. And so we have those events coming up really all in preparation and a convention committee chair meeting in between now and then. And all of those are needed details to make sure that we have the capacity and that we're ready to deliver a tremendous event. And, you know, the upcoming convention in early January, the 6th through 9th, is our 40th event. So it'll be an absolute celebration.
It's going to be a party, but it's going to be a great party on top of all that. Now, moving between, that's all of our good news. There are some things, unfortunately, that we're facing right now that I really think people need to be totally aware of. And you were filling me in a little bit before we started this about some of the things that we've got coming up very quickly that everybody needs to be aware of. And everybody needs to get in touch with people and say, wait a minute.
There are, unfortunately, and there's a number of things just over the last 30 days specifically, Larry, that have been in the national news and some of the state-level news as well and international that really are reminders to ourselves of the need for an organization like DSC.
Without a doubt.
And the need for DSC to operate in the space that we operate so effectively, specifically with our relationships, our contacts with state-level congressmen, federal as well, and the reason we have a lobbyist in Washington, D.C., to address these kind of issues. And they're very broad, from state-level initiative petitions. We'll look at Oregon, for example, to start with. There is a state-level initiative petition there to gather several hundred thousand signatures to put an initiative on the ballot for the November election in 2022 coming up that would essentially ban all hunting and fishing within the state. And it's more broad even than that, that no harm would be allowed to any mammal, bird, reptile, amphibian unless someone's life was in danger, an act of self-defense. And so essentially it would eliminate hunting and fishing as we know it in the state of Oregon. Further than that, just in the loss of game and fish license, hunting and fishing license, it would result in a loss of $50 million to the Game and Fish Agency. That's just on the sale of the hunting license and fishing license. There's much more dollars that would be lost in addition to that. And so it would have total devastation to the Game and Fish Agency. They would have no more ability to do their job to conserve the state's resources. And so, but yet that's the kind of thing that's there on the ballot. And to be very candid, those kinds of things are moved forward through, you know, a few of the very large urban areas, and very likely they'll receive those signatures to get it on the ballot. Now, if it passes or not, obviously we don't know that yet, but very dangerous things, and there is a really strong hunting and fishing culture in a number of those states, from waterfowl hunting to fishing specifically.
Absolutely. There really is.
So that's one that's on the radar.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a big threat, a big challenge, and again, it really speaks completely in the face of what has made North American wildlife management the model of wildlife conservation around the globe. You know, the user pay public benefit model, sportsmen carrying the weight of game and fish agencies from a funding perspective, managing game and fish populations, etc. That model is just slapped in the face with this, you know, initiative petition. But so we have that. We have a pretty similar one that's on the docket in Florida. It's quite broad. Another initiative petition that includes there's five right now in this aggregate group, from stopping toll roads to quality water, wetland health, protection of iconic species. But then lastly, and you kind of wonder how this falls into this large bucket here, but the nexus is essentially the prohibiting captive, canned hunting preserves is the word that is used there. And so an iconic species hunting, which is obviously broad and ambiguous on purpose.
Very ambiguous,
yeah.
Yes.
And hunting preserves could be anything from, you know, quail hunt to feral hogs to deer to, again, a very broad definition there. So there's many things there that are of really significant concern. And when you look at Florida, I mean, Florida has an extremely large base of hunters and anglers.
Oh, my gracious, yes.
And so it's a real concern there. And again, they're in the process now of trying to gathering the needed signatures to be able to put it on the ballot. So, you know, I think, you know, one of the things that I talk about a lot of time is the apathy that hunters and anglers show. And that's obviously not meant in a positive way.
No.
The hunt community, if it's the deer hunting community or bird hunting community or bear hunter community, whatever it is, trappers, fur bearers, whatever it is, they see an issue, and if it doesn't touch them specifically, they don't get concerned with it. They don't take action. They don't take legislative action. They fail to contact their representative or congressman. And so they're very apathetic. And it's a very observational true fact. And so we should all see this as a community of hunters and anglers, as a call to action to always step into that void and contact your representative at the state level, at the federal level, and say, I oppose this, and let me tell you why. And we have to get better as a community about that.
And we're all stakeholders in it. We may not live in Florida, may not live in Oregon, but we're stakeholders in what happens there because of the wildlife, of our caring about wildlife to begin with, but then also because of opportunities and even because of federal land that's there.
Absolutely.
All of us own federal land, so for them to be able to say, that shouldn't happen, you know. So that's right. One of the better ways to, I mean, making people more and more aware, everything we can do make people aware of this, but where does it go beyond that? And how do we correct some of this apathy? Do we have to lose something before people go all of a sudden go, oh my God, you know, why weren't we doing something? Is that what's going to have to happen?
You know, I'm afraid that it might. I'm afraid that it's because right now many of these attacked are essentially aimed at fundamental opportunities.
Right.
Again, the ability to hunt, the ability to fish, and it's going to take, unfortunately, at least the sort of the state of play, it looks like people to lose something close to them to be called to action. And if it's, you know, the attacks on bear hunting right now are constant.
Yes.
And that is coming.
Yes.
And it's coming right along beside wolves, mountain lions, the ability to hunt at all with dogs. And that even includes bird hunting with dogs, all
right.
of that. Animal husbandry is at all associated with that. And many of that are in and around things that are happening at state capitals associated with animal husbandry. Size requirements for the ability to breed and sell a lab, you know, that's used to hunt waterfowl, or maybe it's a flushing dog for pheasant, whatever it might be. And so those things that are dismissed as this doesn't affect me, it absolutely directly affects. We're all stakeholders. And to your point, and you raise a really good point in the sense that, you know, yeah, maybe people that are listening here, they don't live in Oregon or they don't live in Florida,
right.
but they are a stakeholder.
Yes.
Because there are federal lands, and just as a concerned citizen in those respective states, it is a good time to contact your state level, regardless of what state you live in. And feel free to reach out to Oregon, because you are a land, you are a shareholder, stakeholder
yes.
in a piece of federal land. It's really important for people to remember that. But it's also a good time to contact your local state representative and let them know that, hey, I'm aware of these things that are taking place in these other states, and I want you to be my, essentially, you know, keeper of the gate here to make sure this doesn't happen in our state, because these things are happening in another state, and we need to make sure it doesn't happen in wherever your state you're living, Oklahoma or Louisiana or Missouri, wherever it might be, you know, to put your state representative or congressman on alert to say, I'm aware of this, and I'm my representative elected official, I'm holding you responsible that this doesn't happen here, too.
And that could be done through phone calls. It could be done through emails.
Absolutely.
Text, mail.
That's exactly right.
Even the old Postal Service mail kind
That's
of
right.
Thing.
And done respectfully and very professionally.
Yes.
It's very effective.
Yes. I know it here, having worked in Texas side of things, very often swaying somebody's vote comes down to three or four letters.
That's exactly right.
Or three or four
right.
contacts.
And who they've heard from.
It depends on who those three or four were, you know, kind of thing. And then we've talked about this in the past a little bit, I'm a big believer in being positive in the fact that if you have a legislator or congressman, senator, whatever, that's done well in your estimation, then by God, tell him thank you.
Absolutely.
Or her thank you. Those go a long way, too, because even though all of a sudden now they know they're appreciated, and so it hadn't just been a kind of a one-sided thing. And so I think that's really important. But what's the best way in terms of, in Florida or Oregon or Texas or Louisiana or whatever state, what's the best way to find out who your representative is? Because a lot of people, I'm sure, they go to the polls, they vote,
yep.
and you ask them 5 minutes later who they voted for, and chances are they probably couldn't tell you.
That's exactly right. And sometimes it's a perceived barrier, but realizing that most of us carry a smartphone around in our pocket and certainly have one accessible at the house or business, with a real quick Google search, you can literally type in, you know, find my local elected official, and it will run by your zip or at least, you know, nearest location. And you can find that state-level representative and certainly your federal representative as well, depending on the appropriate situation there, the contact. And again, that email, that's probably going to be received by a staffer, which is fine because
yes.
they're accumulating those results and they're going to provide that to, I use the word boss in air quotes because that's
right.
usually how they refer to who they work for.
Exactly.
But they'll provide their constituents feedback to them and let them know that, hey, we're hearing chatter on this, or this is an item that we're receiving some communication on and it's important to our constituents, and thus you know, they'll self-inform themselves on it. And sometimes, and I've had this happen to me, they'll reach out. And it may be a staffer that calls you and say, hey, we appreciate the call or contact or email or letter or whatever it was. And you'd have 2 minutes because I got a couple of questions for you. And that's the
right.
best thing in the world.
Amen.
Engagement like that, you know.
Absolutely.
And they can hear where you're coming from a personal convention standpoint to maybe philosophical, whatever it might be, but what's near and dear to you, you know, and you can answer those questions and tell them, hey, I support this or I don't support this, and this is why, you know. And whenever you engage like that respectfully and professionally, you'll get a whole lot further.
You do. You do. It's the whole thing. You win, catch more flies with honey than you can vinegar, kind of thing when you get right down to it. But absolutely. What about some of the other states? I know there are some things going on across the water that a lot of times people go, oh, that's over in Europe or that's in Africa or,
exactly,
or New Zealand or Australia. You know, that's not going to affect us. But it's like a tsunami wave, as far as I'm concerned, coming toward us. And we've got to deal with it.
We do. We have a lot of things. So we talked about a couple of state-level issues, and we have one right now that's from a congressional-level stateside that relates to the interior appropriations, the funding of the Department of the Interior and thus Fish and Wildlife Service. And so the way funding works at the congressional level or at the national level more specifically is, you know, a budget is approved, hopefully, ultimately.
Right.
And then those respective agencies, if it's BLM or National Forest or whatever it might be, Department of the Interior in this case, and then they know how they prioritize funding and staff resources and allocations, et cetera. They know what the next year looks like. Well, oftentimes, if those things aren't passed, they will operate off what's called continuing resolution, which essentially means same this year as it was last year,
right,
which
right.
What happens fairly frequently. In the last probably 30 days, the Interior Appropriations Funding Bill, there was some language inserted in that, actually Section 436, that the language was pretty brief, two or three sentences, but what the language did is it allowed the funding for the Fish and Wildlife Service, and this isn't unique, it happens all the time, but this particular language would prohibit the processing of permits of imports, legally taken animals, associated with elephant and lion from a few specific African countries. And so the funding of those agencies was contingent upon them not using any of those funds to legally do the job in which they are tasked with doing, which the irony and the hypocrisy in that is just unimaginable, but it happens all the time. You look in that same appropriations bill and there'll be things in there about not touching this mine or not working on this mitigation or this whatever else it might be. And so it's essentially each congressman from whatever respective geographic area they come from having their pet project, and I mean that to be
literally
detrimental.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. To not get it funded or to try to get it funded, whatever
right.
It might be in each particular case. And obviously this came from some assemblage of congressmen that were willing to try to support the Fish and Wildlife Service and DOI, but not to support them doing their job in which they're charged to do, to process legally, import, again, legally taken animals. I'm not talking about smuggled or illicit. This is legally taken animals approved by CITES, approved by the host country. And so that language was passed by the House. A number of Republicans offered amendments to strike the language. The language was not struck. It was voted down in block, which means it was grouped together and then voted down. So now it moves to the Senate. And again, it's the problem here is the United States policy negatively impacting conservation policies around the world and negatively impacting the sovereign rights of indigenous people in Africa. It's hypocrisy at its worst.
It is.
Yeah.
And as those continue, if those kind of things, it's a death knell to the species that they're saying, oh man, we're trying to save.
It is, 100%. And if those congressmen would stop and actually make a phone call to the ministers of those countries or literally walk down the hall and ask one of the ambassadors that represent those three countries, how is my proposed policy here going to impact your people, they would hear directly, and they already hear it constantly, but they don't listen.
They don't listen.
That your politics are going to hurt wildlife conservation in my country and my people, but they simply don't care, and that's the fact. So
that is so sad. But
it is.
And that is a really tough road to hoe because these folks have been elected, and you wonder who these people are. You know, it concerns me the fact that, yeah, look who you've elected, but look who the electorate was that elected those
That's right.
folks, too. That is really spooky when you get right down to it.
It is, you know, and the thing about it is it's not just unique to the U.S., you know.
We look across
the border to the north, and we see Canada right now with a petition trying to prohibit legal ivory trade. Again, legally taken elephants. We're not talking about poached animals Legally taken elephants with a conservation contribution associated with that. So that's taking place as a public consultation right now in Canada. And then we look to Europe, which is pretty consistently a mess from trying to juggle and trying to essentially be the moral compass of the world, as they believe that they are trying to be from a parliament standpoint. And right now, you know, with all the things that are going on in the world and all the challenges from a public health standpoint and mental health and all these kind of things, one of the items that the British Parliament is looking to take up is associated with sentient animals. And by that, sort of what level of arthropod through the whole continuum of animals have senses and feelings and feel things, if you will. And one of the most recent ones, more specifically, is the British Parliament vowing to investigate, do lobsters feel pain?
I saw the headlines that thankfully you showed me, and I mean, my gracious. You know, the interesting thing about that is people don't want to associate death with life. Very directly, all life on Earth depends directly or indirectly upon the death of another organism. When you get right down to either to eat, to in terms of plants, that plant has to die so that that can go back into the soil. I mean, everything on Earth, really, as far as life is concerned, depends upon the death of something else.
That's exactly right.
It's sad that people can't realize that.
And everything has a footprint ecologically. You know, and I had the conversation the other day of whatever someone's dietary restrictions are, and I respect anybody's individual right to choose whatever they want to eat, and that's great. But I'm not here to tell you what to eat, and you shouldn't be here to tell me what to eat.
No.
But along the lines of that is, and I know you and I both had the opportunities to engage in some, I'll just call them healthy debates with people.
Absolutely, yes.
And some fiery debates, maybe more appropriately. Yeah. But when we look at the ecological footprint of, you know, because we often are criticized with a number of things, but, you know, from a sustainable use and a consumptive take type standpoint, and which is a biologist you and I both know to be absolutely fabricated, because we understand and know the science and the conservation footprint and impact that we have made through sustainable use around the world. But those conversations about, you know, that we shouldn't eat this or we shouldn't eat that, and we look at the impact of that, and from those that choose to have a vegetarian or a vegan diet, it should also all be the while undertaken. Again, I respect the fact that somebody chooses to do that for dietary reasons. Great.
Absolutely.
But to not do so under the cloak and dagger and guise of the fact that it does not have an ecological impact, because it has a phenomenal ecological impact, because that farm and those practices that actually used to be at one point in time wildlife habitat that have been converted to that type of farming have an ecological impact.
Have a huge, I mean, look at the habitat that's lost for songbirds, if you will.
You bet.
Various insects, butterflies. I mean, it's just a long, long list of things that are impacted. It's not just if it's a wheat field, it's not the pronghorn antelope or the elk or the buffalo that roam there. Yeah, that's part of it. But
you bet.
It's so many other things that involve there in terms of wildlife. And unfortunately, I think people don't, when they think of wildlife, they think maybe in terms of large animals and some birds. They don't think in terms of the entirety of what wildlife really, what all it covers kind of thing.
That's exactly right.
All those folks, you know, I like you, I appreciate the fact, if that's what they want to do, that's fine. But if it's a health reason, absolutely. But you're right, don't do it under the guise of, oh my God, I'm not killing anything. Because if you're eating and you're alive, you're responsible for having killed something, whether you've done it yourself or you've had somebody else do it.
That's exactly right. You know, so when we sort of revisit the fact of that, looking at the lobsters feel pain, and not to minimize that, really, it's a symptom of a really large shift in society. You know, it's a shift away from an understanding of the natural world, an understanding of a reliance on rural lifestyle and understanding farming and agricultural practices, right? And how that way of life has occurred, and people are you know, 2 and 3 and 4 generations removed away from the land now, so they have no stewardship ethic in them to speak of, and they have no connection with the land. And so there's a complete and total disconnect there between an understanding of how oneself exists and how its connection with the natural world.
it's sad. Somewhere down the way, it will, the pendulum will swing back.
Yep.
But it's going to take an unbelievable shift in humans, as far as I'm concerned, when you get right down to it. In terms of attitude, and that attitude may be brought about by wars, some kind of pestilence, diseases, where all of a sudden now we have to go back to the very basics of things. That's sad. We don't need to go there, because to make that swing all that way far back, to really do some good for wildlife. And you've talked a little bit in the past about IUCN. Mm. What's going on there? Isn't there something coming up pretty quickly?
There is. So we have the World Congress, which is a 1-in-4-year event.
Right.
It was scheduled initially for 2020. The event did not happen then for obvious reasons. COVID was taking place, and we were dealing with that, and the ability to have that meeting with thousands of people from every corner of the world, it just wasn't able to happen. And so the event was moved a couple of times, and now the event is to occur in early September. The meeting is to occur in Marseille, France, which that alone is creating some significant travel issues and really is kind of compromising the integrity of the meeting at this point.
That would be the case.
Absolutely. And so there will be a number of people from around the world that are attending the meeting online. But nonetheless, it's a very important forum for international policy and conservation issues to move forward from a biodiversity strategy planning standpoint. Conservation of world's resources in the broadest sense, from waters of the world to lands of the world, strategic planning associated with 30 by 30 initiatives, all of these kind of broad, huge, scalable type events.
How do we get more organizations, it's more organizations than it is individuals?
That's correct, yes.
How do we get more organizations involved who have a science-based understanding of the real world?
Absolutely. When we look here in North America, we have a couple of organizations that are within sustainable use type organizations that believe in, that science should guide wildlife conservation policy. Obviously, DSC is a proud member, and Wild Sheep Foundation is a member as well. When we look, that pool gets pretty shallow after that point. And so I know, when talking with my peers of other organizations, that I certainly urge them to consider becoming a member, because that is the way in which those initiatives, if you will, and policies move forward, in a sense of a vote, and the vote only comes from the members. And so that's really what we need, and we need those to engage. And when we look around the world, we do have partner members there like CIC and FACE and organizations that we work with and we galvanize with and we work together with. Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies is another one that we work closely with.
Yes, sir.
Obviously an extremely strong, incredible organization that represents all of the game and fish agencies in North America, Canadian provinces as well, that obviously has a strong background in science-based, wildlife conservation. So, but we need more and more organizations that are willing to, because it's a pretty onerous process, and nowadays, it's not. It's challenging to get in. It's not just a slam dunk guarantee that to be accepted into IUCN, which makes membership have some credibility to it.
Yes, sir.
But it takes some effort.
Well, hopefully, you get some more organizations here. I mean, we've got several really great species organizations here that are directly affected by all this.
We do.
Some a little bit indirectly, but there's, just like with the Wild Turkey Federation, there are wild turkeys now, Rio Grande turkeys in Australia and New Zealand and all those kind of things. And on the white-tailed deer side, we got white-tailed deer in New Zealand. We got them in Finland, probably a few other places as well, Anything having to do with those species there can affect us here.
Absolutely.
And vice versa, too. So to me, it's time for everybody that can to get involved and have more people involved on the science-based side of things rather than the hysteria that these other groups kind of like to play off of.
That's exactly right. And there's a few of those organizations that play off emotion. And, in fact, they will absolutely just fabricate data. We've seen it again,
Oh, yeah.
Center for Biological Diversity recently filed a petition with the Department of the Interior seeking to prohibit the import and export of all wild mammals and birds. Again, speaking against the authority of sovereign nations, speaking against the authority of CITES, all of those international regulatory bodies, the Center for Biological Diversity is wanting to essentially, you know, trump all of those things and wanting to change U.S. policies and politics. And they do it under the guise of wildlife health, specifically trying to play on this pandemic. And I mean, what they do is just fraud. I'm going to call it what it is, Larry.
It is. I've seen some of their propaganda, for lack of a better term, which and really that's what it is.
That's what it is. Absolutely. So there's organizations like them and Humane Society that absolutely make up data, play off emotions. They don't speak to, they don't engage the stakeholders. You know, when you look at when they represent Africa, the only stakeholder that they will represent is Kenya. And Kenya has been probably one of the greatest examples of the catastrophe of management that exists.
It's horrible what's happened there. I mean, outside of the interior of some of the national parks, I'm talking about the interior, there's
absolutely
no wildlife there anymore to speak
That's
of.
It. And they've essentially kind of bought and paid for their place there in those countries. And but you never hear of them having any presence in the countries that actually have growing numbers of wildlife, you know, in Namibia and Zimbabwe and Botswana and all of those countries with prosperous wildlife conservation programs and thus wildlife numbers. And so those organizations, they're just fraudulent. They really are in what their activities and what they do and where they put their money more specifically. That's a whole, we could spend another hour on that.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you want to learn something, ask for a financial statement.
That's right.
On some of these things that I've been asked to be involved in the past, that's usually, it's come down, that's my first question. Let me see a financial statement. I want to see where your money actually goes, you know.
That's right.
Whose pocket or how widely is it spread kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, well, one of the ways to get more people involved is, of course, to belong to organizations, specifically DSC. Because through that, we can provide them with more information than they can probably get anywhere else dealing on not only what's happening here in our country, but on throughout the world as well, too.
That's exactly right. You know, that is really the space in which we operate. We work with partners around the world. We don't duplicate those efforts in Europe. We rely on our partners like CIC and FACE to be those presence in those spaces where it's needed with the parliament, where we operate here in this North American space when it comes to an advocacy standpoint. Now, we work with partners all over the world, and we have a science presence and a conservation footprint in essentially all of the continents around the world. But joining an organization like DSC, people know that they have the opportunity to be a part of that. They're supporting that. They have someone that's constantly on watch in state capitals in Washington, D.C., and working with partners around the world. If it's New Zealand and tar eradication programs, or if it's the European Union or the British Parliament or whatever it might be, to things that are taking place right now in Washington, D.C., that we are there in that space working on their behalf.
Working on their behalf, we need the people there with us as well, too, in a lot of different ways in terms of membership and also in other types of support. So
that's right.
And we're heading into an interesting time as it is, I think, and so please become involved. Please, you know, become a member of DSC so they can learn more about what's going on, but also then become involved on an individual basis, as we were talking earlier, with your legislators.
That's right. You know, our desire is to convert members into advocates in the sense of that, you know, someone that is active and engaged in state-level issues, engaged in federal issues. Come support DSC by being a member. We will keep you engaged and informed. And come join us at convention to learn more about what we're about and support our great partners from around the world that are in that space.
And I think that's an absolute place to just say right now, tell us how to get in touch with DSC or how to get in touch with anybody here at the office.
Absolutely. They can find us at biggame.org. All the information about who we are, what we're about, grants, things we support, information about the convention, volunteer opportunities, all those kind of things can be found right there. And we'd love to follow up with somebody.
Corey, thank you. We got to roll up our sleeves and go to work.
It's time to go to work. I appreciate it.
A lot of ways. Thank you very much, Corey.
Thank you.
Join us right back here next time on DSC's Campfires.
Thanks for joining us around the campfire. To leave a comment or suggestion for an upcoming episode, go to Instagram at Larry Wysoon Outdoors. Please join me right here next week for another DSC's Campfires.
DSC Campfires with Larry Wysoon has also been brought to you by the Texas Wildlife Association, working for tomorrow's wildlife today, TRHP Outdoors, Kenitrek Boots for the trails less traveled, Boyt, the finest in hunting gear, Pyramid Air for all things air gun, and Ripcord, rescue travel protection.
Don't miss Thursdays with Saltwater Experience, brought to you by Golden Boat Lifts, every Thursday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment. Brave anglers search for the one they call king, but who will take his throne? Tune in to Waypoint TV's Battle for Silver, Saturday, May 18th from 12 to 6 p.m. Eastern, presented by Abyss Battery. Waypoint TV.